The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Kevin Stanfield and Claude Jennings, who are entirely responsible for its content. Sorry, guys, you are on your own.
This is the Federal Football Report, a weekly wrap-up of all things burgundy and gold. The Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. Here are your hosts, Kevin Stanfield and Claude Jennings.
All right, it's the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 and 820 AM and federalnewsradio.com. You can email us at federalfootballreport@federalnewsradio.com and follow us on Twitter at FFRep. I'm Claude Jennings. He's Kevin Stanfield. Kevin, we get to talk about a win today.
This is uncharted territory. Yeah. It's been a little while.
Do we know how to do this? Do we know how to talk about a Redskins win on the Federal Football Report? I think we'll do okay. Well, let me set the scene for you, Kevin. So 3 minutes and 14 seconds left in the game. It's home. Homecoming weekend. Skins are at home, down by one. The ball's at their own 20, and thus begins the legend of Colt McCoy as Redskins quarterback, the comeback kid, and the Redskins went on a 22-yard field goal at the end of regulation by Kai Forbath, 19-17. The Skins snap a four-game losing streak and improved to 2-5 on the year.
That's an improvement.
There's so much to talk about with that game.
Kevin,
in the world earlier in the week. Coach Gruden says he's not going to bench Cousins. That Cousins is his starter. That's his guy. Under no circumstances will he play Colt McCoy.
Who believe that? I mean, there's no way in the world that you would believe that. Unfortunately, Kirk didn't start out that bad. He was avoiding some pressure. He had a nice pass to Niles Paul on the run, fingertip catch. Niles was a lot of yards after catch, but unfortunately, once you get hit a couple of times, you play quarterback, you respond one of two ways. You get tougher or you get gun shy.
Yeah.
And for a split second, you take your hand, you take your eyes off the field, you're looking for the rush, everything is just not in sync anymore. And that beating that's been taken over the past couple of weeks has taken its toll on, I think
it's those beatings and it's also the turnovers that have taken its toll on the Skins coaching staff and Jay Gruden particularly, as far as, you know, this is my quarterback, and then at halftime making a change. In the first half, he had that sack fumble and then the interception, and he has been turnover prone throughout his short career as a backup and then starting while RG3 is hurt. And you just can't turn the ball over and win in the National Football League. That's not going to happen. You've got to be able to protect. There's some fundamental things you've got to be able to do in order to win in this league. Number one, you can't turn the ball over. Number two, you have to be able to run the ball. Number three, you got to be able to stop the run. Though, if you can do some of those things, then you'll win in this league.
Well,
and he turns the ball over way too much.
In that sense, don't you have to fault the coaching staff for putting him in a position where he's
about
to make
himself? Well, you can't have a quarterback and say, well, we're not going to put you in a position to throw the ball.
You got to establish the run. You got to give the
ball.
And you know what? I was on Twitter yesterday following all of the experts, so-called. Mm-hmm. And there was one sequence where it was a three and out. Burgundy and Gold had a three and out, but it was three consecutive running plays. And to me, that wasn't a failure. That was at least them saying, we're going to attempt to run the ball. Now, Twitter blew up. Why are you running the ball three times? You got to throw. But when you put yourself in that position where you have to throw, you're playing right into the defense's hand because they had eight guys in the box and they were coming after Kurt. Now, interestingly, they did the same thing in the Philly game.
Mm-hmm.
But they had plays designed where Kurt had a quick out, a quick option, a quick release. There was one blitz sequence where Kirk threw deep to DeSean McCoy, and I tweeted at that time, you need a quick, like a slant route as a hot read on that. And I'm saying that they're putting Kirk in a position where it's unfortunate for him that he's sort of falling under the pressure.
Well, yeah, you know, we talked about this, to no end on episodes earlier, that the team seems to abandon the run when they're in close games where you don't have to abandon the run. Again, Alfred Morris, and there's been some criticism to Alfred Morris in the running game saying that it hasn't been the same as last year, but I don't think that they run the ball as much as they had in previous years. Again, just 18 carries for Alfred Morris, 5 for Roy Helu. I just think that you run the ball more when you've got Alfred Morris as your running back. 18 carries is not enough, especially in a game where it's not out of hand. But again, you know, I understand the move to Colt McCoy. And then the first pass that he threw in the game, now granted, Pierre Garçon did most of the work on that play. And by the way, Pierre Garçon is still a member of the team. Kirk Cousins wasn't throwing him the ball hardly at all earlier in the season.
Well, you know, they have the players mic'd up a lot of times in these games in the NFL, and I was able to get into the huddle. Yeah, my sources got me in the huddle, so I found out what Colt McCoy told the team once he got in the huddle.
There's times for falling apart. There's times for getting funky. This is one of those funky times. So what's he going
to
be?
And they obviously responded to Colt, right?
Well, and it's funny because we talked about Kirk Cousins' turnovers. That was his 11th turnover this season, that second interception. So he had turnover 10 and 11, both in the first half of this game. And, you know, he's just turnover prone. Now, Colt McCoy in relief, 11 for 12, 128 yards, one touchdown, and the game-winning drive. Do we deem him the comeback kid, John Elway, just yet? Or and he's relatively young himself. We were talking about this before the show that while you get Colt McCoy in, and the first thing I said to myself while watching the game was, this is the kind of backup that you need. One with, you know, experience, who's been in the league for a few years, not two guys drafted in the same, you know, draft class,
both
trying to learn. Because to be fair, you know, the same arguments you make for RG3 needing to grow, needing to learn, take some time to let him become the passer he's going, you know, to become. Become a mature NFL quarterback is the same excuse you could use for Kirk Cousins, that once he becomes more mature, once he gets some more game experience, he'll cut down on the turnovers. So then you say, okay, Colt McCoy is the kind of backup that you would normally have, someone with some experience. But he was drafted in 2010. I mean, he's only been in the league for 4 years himself.
Right, but he does have experience. You know, he eventually earned a starting job in Cleveland. I think he beat out Jake DeLone. From the Panthers. And then the Browns drafted Brandon Whedon from Florida State, and he lost the job.
Who now plays for the Cowboys, who's Romo's backup. Cleveland goes through some quarterbacks,
Yeah. So he's got experience. He's got game experience under his belt. And, you know, he's a journeyman, but he did spend last season with the 49ers, so he's been around winning organizations as well. He's been a little injury-prone in his career. Suffered a couple of concussions in high school and in college, and then there was that game we were talking about earlier.
And he had a really good college career. I think he has he might have the most wins of any college quarterback, or maybe in the top five or something like that. He has tons of wins as a college quarterback.
And he
made it to that national championship game where they lost to Alabama. We were talking about that game, too. On the first drive, he had some kind of weird hip or leg rib injury or something like that that took him out of the game for the rest of the way. You're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. I'm Claude Jennings. He's Kevin Stanfield. We get to talk about a win today. What do you think about the defense, Kevin? Now, again, it's hard to measure how good a unit is, and it's not as if the Skins are, you know, like the standard for the league, but when you're measuring it up against two wins against Jacksonville and against the Tennessee Titans, you know, it's hard to say just how good is, you know, this defensive unit after getting thrashed a couple of games against Philadelphia and the Giants. And
Well, you know, the Philadelphia game was completely winnable. The Giants, I think that was, like I said, after the short turnaround, they just put the boy in a bad position because they had him, he was just thrown almost 50 times, right? Mm-hmm. And his arm was just dead. So I think that the defense, if nothing else, they showed a little competitiveness because they benched Perry Riley Jr. Mm-hmm. and started Will Compton. I like Will Compton. Right. I like his motive. If you notice, Compton is always around the ball, no matter if it's his assignment or not. And he actually dropped back in pass coverage.
Right.
If you notice, the tight ends who have been like destroying this team all over the year, they didn't catch any touchdowns. They had that one fluke touchdown when the safeties just, I guess they were tackling with their eyes closed or something, just missed the guy. But I think the defense stepped up. Now, we did have the injury to Brian Arakpo. He's going to have an MRI today. But the word is that he could be gone for the year.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, he's shown himself to be a bit injury prone the last couple of years.
Yeah. And again, a personal bias. I think they have him playing out of position. I think he should be he's an undersized defensive end along the lines of I forget his name. The guy that played at Elvis Dumervil.
Dumervil, right.
I think they want him to be a DeMarcus Ware, and he's not.
He's not that type of player.
He's not. We're going to see a lot of Troy Murphy now, and I forget the other kid's name, Jeffcoat. Mm-hmm. We're going to see a lot of them now, and hopefully guys
give them
will step
shot.
Up.
See who's hungry. See who wants it. You
that's
know,
what they need.
And that's exactly what they need.
Secondary playing pretty well. We got actually got a turnover.
Yeah, right. There was a turnover in the game, and we hadn't seen that from the defense all year, and that was good. Also, let's see some other positives. Jordan Reed played two games in a row.
Two in a row. That's a record. We are giving awards for that. Yeah, two in a row.
Now, they've got to get better on third downs. You got to be able to convert third downs. They were 3 for 11 on third downs yesterday, and red zone conversions. They were 0-for-4 as far as touchdowns in the red zone. Kicked 4 field goals. Yeah. You got to be able to put the ball in the end zone if you want to, you know, win some games.
I think that goes back to the running game, though. I think that we're so big play hungry. We think that if a play only gets 2 yards, it's unsuccessful. Mm-hmm. But if you get 2 on 1st, 2 on 2nd, that sets up a 3rd and 6 as opposed to those 3rd and 10s.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, and you've got, we've got 4 downs, and for the most part on the offense, you've got 3 downs to get to that next first down. If you can get your, it's all about getting yourself in a 3rd and short. If you can get yourself in a 3rd and short, then you can get the defense really on their heels because they don't know whether you're going to run that ball. You can do play action fake, especially if you've been running the first two downs and you've been successful at the run for the first 2 downs. Then you can, you know, some play action. You can do some bootlegs. You can do all kinds of things. You can play action, go deep to DeSean Jackson, who, by the way, is a straight-up playmaker. Yet again, we see it. He's a playmaker. He's got kind of a hot temper, too.
Yes.
We saw both parts of him yesterday.
Now, you know, everybody out there listening, you know we're talking about the pass interference call late in the game to put the Burgundy go in field goal range, which was almost taken away because DeSean decided at that point in his career he was going to just go nuts. And it was so funny because watching the game, I told my wife, look, everybody in the stands, everybody watching knows you shouldn't be doing that right now.
And they're like, wait,
go away.
Chill, yeah, just walk away.
Walk away.
Step away from the
action. Everybody knew that except for DeSean.
He's the only one who did
that.
He's
the only one. But you know what? He plays with all
with
of
passion.
His heart.
I mean,
all
you don't have to question.
Heart.
You don't have to question his heart at all. And for a while, I mean, he's hurt now. That was who D'Angelo Hall was for the last couple of years for the Redskins.
Right.
The guy who played with heart, who got beat deep sometimes, but he was always covering the best receiver on the other team. He was always making the emotional play. And, yeah, he did get some penalties. He had some late hits, some personal fouls. But he played with emotion. And so sometimes you take that on a team. And you can attest to this for the most part throughout the game. I mean, both teams kind of slept walk through the game. It was a rather boring game for those who might not care one way or the other about the Washington Redskins or the Tennessee Titans. I couldn't imagine if you're not a fan or interested in anything that has to do with these teams wanting to watch that game at all, because it was pretty pedestrian. There was nothing really exciting about it. We loved it because we saw Colt McCoy come in for Kirk Cousins. There's a lot of drama surrounding that, but that's inside stuff. It wasn't anything that would necessarily spark your interest if you weren't invested one way or the other. But yeah, DeSean Jackson brought that energy and that passion, and it seemed as if for the most part he was the only one who was.
Yeah, I think that what bothers me about that, and you're noticing the same thing with the situation with Seattle and Percy Harvin. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, when the guys leave the team, when they're removed from the team, you hear all of a sudden about how bad they were. Percy Harvin ran over an old lady in the parking lot, and DeSean Jackson is the head of the mafia on the East Coast and stuff, right? You know, I think it's kind of unfortunate that the organizations use the media to pretty much to destroy the character of these guys. I think that DeSean will find, for the most part, if he's passionate about what he does and he keeps his nose clean and he plays hard, he'll be appreciated around here. And mm-hmm. I think that the rest of the team, if they just play hard, keep the nose clean, do what they're supposed to do, they'll be appreciated. You've asked the question several times, like, who is this team? Mm-hmm. What is this team's identity? I think that little outburst that DeSean had shows that there's a little bit of leadership lacking at the top. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason for that, and I found it out this weekend. We're going to do a little quiz here, real brief.
Okay.
Impromptu. How many coaches do you think the Burgundy Eagle have on their staff?
How many coaches, period?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Let's go with 13.
16.
Wow, okay.
16 coaches.
Okay.
We have 9 offensive coaches, some more offensive than others. 7 defensive coaches. The one I found most interesting is we have Shane Day. Do you know who Shane Day is?
No clue.
Shane Day. Shane Day is the assistant offensive line, offensive quality control coach.
Wait, offensive line quality control?
Yeah, offensive line slash offensive quality control. He does both. He has two jobs. Okay. After the need, 17
coaches.
So then that
would be 17,
right?
if he weren't taking...
So I'm trying to figure out, what is it that the offensive quality control guy does?
Yeah, because he's not control. There's no quality that has to be going on. Like, what does he actually do?
Hey, that didn't look good.
Do you have all those titles there? Do you have other titles that are just kind of obscure? Weird.
Yeah, well, we have the offensive quality control coach. We have a quality control coach for the defense. Let me turn the page here. You had to have pages of these guys, right? Let's see now. Jake Peets is the offensive quality control, the head offensive quality control coach.
Offensive quality.
Brett Munsey, he's the coach of special projects.
For the
not special
offense.
Teams. No, for the team. Special projects. Special projects. Let's see now. Defensive quality control is Aubrey Present. Oh, excuse me, Pleasant. Sorry, Aubrey. Okay. Aubrey Pleasant. You got
what do all these people do? You would assume with all these roles and responsibilities, the team would have more than just two wins. And I'm pretty sure other teams have, you know, jobs similar to this. But what in the world do they do? Yeah. What are they doing now?
Somebody told me once a long time ago, anything that has more than one head is a monster.
Right.
So you got 16 guys telling these guys what to do. That's why the team doesn't have an identity yet, because you got too many identities at different places.
Well, that's a good point. And I think when you look at it, even look at the coaching staff, I'm not sure if Jay Gruden has an identity as a coach just yet.
Not quite.
He might still be trying to figure himself out. And normally, you know, the team will take on the personality of the coach. Or even if you break it down to the different sides of the ball, the defense will take on the personality of its coordinator. Offense will take on the personality of its coordinator. And, you know, maybe Jay just doesn't know, you know, who he is yet. Maybe he hasn't developed into who he's going to be as a coach just yet. You're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 and 820 AM, federalnewsradio.com. You can follow us on Twitter at FFRep and email us at federalfootballreport@federalnewsradio.com. Kevin Stanfield in the studio with me. I'm Claude Jennings. 19-17, the Redskins beat the Tennessee Titans 22-yard field goal at the end of regulation.
Hold it right there.
Uh-huh.
Let me ask you this. Fullbacks lined up to kick the field goal.
Mm-hmm.
How'd you feel?
I was shaky. Because the way this season has gone, I said it's fitting for him just to miss this field goal and the Skins lose again.
Yeah. And the announcers, they were right on top of it. They said, he had an extra point blocked earlier this year.
And the Titans just blocked the field goal to beat the Jaguars.
Yeah.
But you know what? The interesting thing was how much confidence the Titans seem to have had in their defense, or the lack of confidence that they seem to have had in Colt McCoy, because the drive before that, they just ran three straight plays, three and out, and just elected to kick the ball back to the Redskins and give it back to them on their 20-yard line, as opposed to actually proactively trying to get a first down to kind of seal the game. And I think that conservative play calling said a lot, either how they view their own offense or they didn't want to put the ball in Charlie Whitehurst's hand to lose the game, I guess, or they just thought the Redskins wouldn't be able to go 80 yards and win the game.
Well, yeah, you see it all the time. The backup quarterback comes in, the team has not prepared.
Yeah, we see that here
too, but well, it's so easy here. We face the backup quarterback, and he says, oh, man, this is my chance to pad my stats. Colt has the advantage of being on the sideline and seeing what was open, listening to the coaches talk and say, well, you know, Kirk missed this one and missed that. And for whatever reason, the spark of having that fresh guy in the huddle. And I think that was a valuable learning experience for Jay Gruden. Like you said, he was determined that he wasn't going to pull Kirk. Kirk was going to learn. He was going to get this right. But at some point, you're going to start thinking about the team.
Yeah,
we got to win.
Yeah, and the question would always be, well, why are you so married to Kirk Cousins? It's not like you draft him. It's not like he's your guy, you know. You don't have to keep him in as a backup. You got Colt McCoy, couldn't be any worse.
That's right. That's right.
Could have played any worse than Kirk Cousins.
So that was a learning experience for Gruden too. You don't have to be married to these guys. Just because they started doesn't mean they get to automatically keep their job, right? You know, you get paid for performance. And if you don't perform, it's all about winning. Now and you gotta kind of admire, he's got a 5-year deal, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
He doesn't, you know, it's not like that, you know, he has that same pressure to win that these other 15 coaches
right.
might have. Oh, and then they had four managers, you know, they got four managers going to 16 coaches, so infrastructure they got.
Yeah, okay, so yeah, they've got a lot of bureaucracy going on.
But I think that the leadership thing, they have to streamline this thing to get the leadership thing going. And I think the leadership, you know, comes from the top. And he showed the leadership, like I said, he benched Perry Riley for Will Compton, and I think they showed there was a there's another Compton that played some of the offensive line that I forget his first name, but you got to make changes. You got to show that you're willing to do whatever it takes for the team to win, and the team sees this. The team responds to that.
Sure.
So that thing, that spur, and you know, that might have been a 10-yard game, Pierre Garçon, a 10-yard game on that first pass.
Sure.
But that spark, they had whatever spark they needed. Same thing happened when Kirk came in, when Robert Griffin came in.
Yeah. So his first pass that game was
a
touchdown.
Right, so maybe just keep changing them back and forth. Every series, bring another one in. They throw a touchdown.
We'll see, whatever works. So the Skins snap a 4-game losing streak, improving to 2-5 on the year, beating the Tennessee Titans 19-17. On Alumni Weekend. It was homecoming weekend for the Redskins. And so in the spirit of homecoming and celebrating players of the past, Kevin, you got a chance to sit and talk with Redskins great John Riggins.
That's right. Riggo, number 44. That's right. The Diesel. And we caught up. We had a chance to chat and reminisce. I don't know if y'all remember, I used to actually work on a TV show, John Riggins' TV show. We talked a little bit about that. And surprising thing, we talked absolutely no football. And it was great.
Good. Well, look, we'll get a chance to catch up with Riggo. Kevin talks to him, and so we'll hear that interview when we come back on the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio and federalnewsradio.com.
One, two, three, take my hand and come with me because you look so fine that I really want to make you mine. You look so fine that...
Now back to the Federal Football Report with Claude and Kevin, two of the best in the business. By the way, I am getting paid for this, right?
Ladies and gentlemen, it is my extreme pleasure to introduce to you a dear, dear, dear friend of mine. You know him as a Hall of Fame running back and Super Bowl MVP, but I know him as L. Riggo. Ladies and gentlemen, John Riggins. John, how are you doing today?
I am fine, Kevin. How are you doing?
Oh, man, lovely, lovely. I was telling the folks that I'm in the studio where we used to record the TV show, and I was going to call it the Kevin Stanfield Memorial Studio, but you said, like, don't jump the gun on that.
Yeah, I don't think you want to go down that road. But by the way, just for the record, you know, I was thinking about this whole deal, and, you know, the fact that you've got your own show now or you're contributing mightily on air, you know, I just want to apologize for holding you back all those years. I just didn't give you enough time. But obviously somebody had the good sense to go ahead and turn it over to you.
Well, I do appreciate. You know, we have to overcome those obstacles in life. But the reason I wanted to talk to you, John, is because I don't think enough people know about what you're doing right now. And ladies and gentlemen, if you go to Riggo44.com, you'll get all the current scoop on what John is doing. And he's doing something amazing. He's doing this show called Riggo on the Range. And let me get out of the way, and John, let you tell the people what's happening with that.
Well, I tell you what, Kevin, a couple of years ago, you know, I kind of got out of the hardcore sporting scene, and I've always enjoyed the outdoors, and I've always enjoyed cooking, probably because I enjoy eating so much.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, there's a great combination there because, you know, you go out in the woods, you spend the day with some of your friends and what have you, and you maybe will, you know, shop for whatever's available, and it could be wild mushrooms, it could be venison, it could be pheasant, maybe you'll catch a trout, I don't know, but all I know is wild game makes one delicious meal if you know what you're doing and you're not scared of it. And so I have my own way of cooking game, but I've also teamed up with some of the city's finest chefs, and, you know, Scott Bruno, Robert Wiedmeyer, just to name a couple of them, they take it to the next level. I mean, it's amazing stuff that they can do. And, you know, the show's really about the guests and having fun and then having a great meal at the end of it. You can see it now on Discovery America. That's one of the Destination America is one of the Discovery channels.
Right.
And it's on at 9 o'clock on Saturday mornings, or if you're like me, got nothing better to do, you can turn it on at 10 o'clock on Thursday morning and watch it. So whatever fits your fancy, you can record it and watch it later. But it's a show. We have a lot of fun. The first show that was shown 2 weeks ago was myself with some of the Hogs. We did a little fishing trip down in the Outer Banks. Russ Grimm, Jeff Bostic, Joe Jacoby, and Donnie Warren. And then last week's show was Joe Gibbs. We went down and visited him in Charlotte at his race palace, so I guess that's what you would call it. And then I'm not sure what the show is this week. I should know that, but I don't.
Now, if you haven't seen the show, I encourage you to go to Rigo44.com and look at some of these clips or some of these things. They can't help but bring a smile to your face because you can see the good time that you guys are having together. Was it as much fun to do it as it appeared to be?
Made even more fun. I think, you know, and I'll tell you where it really, it's great meeting new people. We fished with Bobby Knight up in Alaska. That's a series. There's a couple shows that will be later on this year with Bobby in it. But the shows where I've had the most fun is getting together with guys like Russ Grimm and Jeff Bostick and Clint Didier. I mean, we did an elk hunt. Clint lives in southeast Washington, down in the corner there where Oregon and Idaho and Washington all come together. Mm-hmm. I should say he has a piece of property down there. He lives a little bit further west than there. And, you know, we were there for a week. And, you know, it's so amazing because you get with these guys. And, you know, when you go to bed at night, you feel like you're going to see them at 10 o'clock, you know, at practice the next day. And just go right back to that old spot where you always were. It doesn't even make it, you know, makes no difference. 30 years have gone by. It's where your mindset still is. So they kind of keep you young hanging around these guys, although we don't look that way anymore.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, the cool thing also was as an outsider looking in, it sort of gave me an opportunity to be on the inside. It was almost like I was around the campfire with you guys sharing some of those old stories or laughing at these stories.
Well, that's exactly the way we kind of try and design the show. I think the show is best when basically, although we don't really ever do it, but theoretically, you just let the camera roll and nobody says anything. And really, some of the stuff, the spontaneity and some of the things that the guys say and some of the stories they bring up, I mean, you know, you've heard the stories before, and, you know, if I for whatever reason, don't see one of these guys for 3 or 4 years and I see them again, they'll tell the same story. But I'll laugh again because, A, it's a great story, and I'll find out something new that I didn't know the first time that they told it. And then they get to talk, and then you find out, you know, even more stuff, because when you think about guys like Russ and Joe and Jeff and Donnie, I mean, they were together really for so many years that, you know, I was only there for 5 years with those guys. They went on without me. They left me on the ice with the polar bears. And I don't blame them for that. I was holding them back again. I don't know what my deal is.
I don't know, man, but it works out in the end.
And yeah, it did.
You know, another thing that I noticed from looking at some of that footage was, like, the real star of the show is this country that you guys are traveling, man. It was some beautiful scenery, right?
Yeah, and yeah, I'll tell you another little secret, just, and for anybody that really is of that persuasion. If you really want to see the United States and you want to turn the clock back about 50 years, get off the interstate. Hmm. That's what we do. And let me tell you something. Those towns, those little towns like I grew up in, Centralia, Kansas, and some of these places, you drive through, there isn't a whole lot changed. I mean, there has been a lot of changes, but at the same time, the town itself is still the way it was. And it reminds me of when I was a kid and my mom lived, you know, grew up in Minnesota, and it's about a 600-mile trip, and every summer we drive up there. It brings back that kind of nostalgia. And, you know, you get to go to the old hardware stores, and there's just so many interesting things out there. But when you're hitting the truck stop after truck stop trying to get from point A to point B as fast as you can, a lot of the stuff passes you by. And we, as you said, Kevin, we get to see some of the most beautiful sights because we do get off of the interstate. And, you know, the Northwest is where we spend a lot of time, and Montana, and like I said, Washington State, and some of those areas around there, Wyoming. It's really been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I know personally, it doesn't matter really how big you get in life or where you've been. It's just a humbling experience the first time you see the Rocky Mountains, man. It's nothing like that.
Yeah, you're right. That's ground zero. It brings you right back to where, you know, where the good stuff is, really. Even though, you know, on the flip side of that, take where we hunted with Clint, that's called the Blue Mountains there in the southeast corner of Washington. And, you know, the name of that show is No Country for Old Farts. And let me tell you something, Kevin, it was no fun. And you can't, you know, you imagine it doesn't happen, but I don't like getting too far from camp. I'm not Paul Bunyan, I'll be the first to tell you that. And I don't want to be spending the night in the woods by myself. That just doesn't sound like a lot of fun to me. But it is a great place, but you got to respect it.
Yeah, now, you know, John, I'm city born and city bred, you know, but I could tell from watching this the respect that you guys, you and your guests, that you all had for nature, right? It's not just a bunch of guys out just hanging out, not knowing what they're doing. I won't say professionalism, but you know what you're doing.
Yeah, I think we do. Yeah, I mean, you really, to know where we've gone, you got to have a little something going on.
Right.
I mean, A, there's an element, there's a little bit of skill. In fact, there's a lot of skill in fishing, but particularly when you get into the fly fishing type of stuff. Hunting, same thing. You've got to understand the animals or the birds, whatever it may be that, what you're after, and understand their patterns and where they may be located any particular time of day. And, it can get tough. If you get an animal down, particularly a big animal, and you're pretty way far away, I mean, all the fun and the adrenaline and the hunt and all that stuff is, all this all goes away, and now really the work begins, because you've got to, take care of the animal. And, let's say you got a 500-600-pound elk, you ain't taking him on your back and dragging him back to camp. So that's about 4 or 5 trips. And by the time, if you're 3 or 4 miles away in rough country, it ain't a lot of fun. That part is where it's kind of like time for the stunt guy.
I heard that.
Here.
Hey, we're talking to Hall of Fame running back and Super Bowl MVP John Riggins. Now, John, my personal—I love all the show, but my personal favorite is when you throw that apron on and prepare your catch. Now, I want to tell everybody, if they go to RiggOnTheRange.com, they also have a list of recipes, man. And this stuff looks so mouthwatering, man. So, tell me about a couple of your favorites.
Well, I love to grill, and so I do a lot of stuff out on the grill, and, like the tenderloins with the venison or the elk or even the antelope are just really are fantastic out there. The one thing I will tell people is, particularly when it comes to wild game, once again, and that's the whole part, it isn't about killing something. It's about harvesting what Mother Nature has to offer and really appreciating it and bringing it home and preparing it. I mean, anybody can go to the store and buy that nice little package of steak that's all wrapped up in cellophane, and you don't have a clue where the process, what it went through to get there. And most of us don't want to know, because having traveled as much as I have, I've been by a lot of the feedlots out in, in Kansas and in Panhandle, Oklahoma. It ain't a pretty sight, but that's a story for another time.
Right.
The recipes themselves, there's some of them that I've created, and it's just, I'm kind of fly by the seat of my pants and just create stuff as I go. And then, of course, some of the stuff is the big boys downtown, the professionals. And, it's just really, like I said, overcooking wild game, I think, is the number one, I want to say, mistake that most people make. And that's when you get to, it's tough or it's gamey. And that's, when somebody gives you, they're cleaning out their freezer and they say, hey, you like some venison? You've tried it, have you? And you go, yeah. Been in there for about 3 years with freezer burned.
Right, right.
Let me tell you what, a prime steak is going to taste gamey if that's the way it's been treated.
Right, right. Now, I know that, you came back from one of your adventures and you blessed me with a piece of elk, and first time I had, let alone tasted, the first time I ever touched elk. But I took a little time, did a little research, saw how to hook it up, how to throw it on the grill. Like you said, overcooking is a mistake, right? Made a nice little molasses sauce, and I'm telling you, man, this was amazing. This was something I think that people get locked into a routine, doing the same thing over and over again, and they're afraid a lot of times to step outside of that. But it's a great big beautiful world out there full of good eating, man.
You know what's interesting, Kevin, is I've noticed there's one of the big chains here in town. I'm not going to mention who it is, but they've got a store in McLean, and I shop at a lot of the different stores from time to time. This is the only store I know that they have. You can go over there and you can buy now, quail, venison, buffalo, duck, goose, and I'm trying to think. I think there's one more I may be forgetting, and I'm just shocked that there's been a proliferation of actually game at your grocery store. Now, not every grocery store stocks these kind of items, but this particular one over in McLean does, and it's kind of unique because obviously there must be the people in that area of Virginia probably are pretty well healed, and they appreciate that kind of stuff. So there's definitely an appetite for wild game.
Yeah, well, I'm telling you, John, I'm just so happy for you, man, because this thing, I encourage everybody, again, go to riggo44.com, look at all the links that John has to Riggo on the Range, and you just see, it's an incredible thing. It's put together so well, and it's just so beautiful, and like you said, you're you and the guys exchanging those stories that some of us have heard a hundred times, and some of us have never heard, man. But it's the total experience, man, that is just so cool. But before I let you go, I got to ask you this, John. I've been wanting to talk to you about this for a long time. One of the highlights of my year so far is seeing you and those hogs on that 18-wheeler in that Papa John's commercial. Right? That was an amazing thing. Now, how did that come about?
Well, you know, basically, you know, we all got together to do the fishing trip. And so we were, you know, I'm spokesman here for some of the Papa John stores here in D.C. and around. And, you know, I just mentioned, well, maybe I could get Russ and Joe and Doc and Jeff and, you know, maybe we can do a spot with them. And then that's when the creative process just took over and they came up with that. And, of course, the guys agreed to do it. And it was just, once again, it was a heck of a lot of fun seeing everybody. And I kind of got, you know, I got a kick out of doing it with them. And I thought, I have to say, I think it turned out pretty well.
Hey, here's the main question, though. Did they actually let you drive that truck?
No. And I was going to. The guy said, oh, we got to get back to Philadelphia. And I went, damn.
You should have drove the truck.
Because you know that when I was a kid, I figured that was the only way I was leaving Centralia was to become a truck driver. And once again, this is the irony of what I'm doing now, is that I always envisioned, because I wanted to see the United States, I always envisioned, you know, seeing the Sequoias and the Redwoods and the Grand Canyon and the Rockies, like you said, and Lake Superior and all. And I figured the only way I was going to do is become a truck driver and just drive the country and, you know, get paid. That'd be my job, and that way I could see it. So I'm kind of doing that now, and then here I go do this commercial, and I get to sit in the front seat of one of those things, but they don't let me drive it around the block. That was a little second.
Next year. Next time. That's right.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Like I said, if you don't get Destination America in your home, call your service provider tonight and tell them, I want Riggo on the range. And you can also go to Riggo44.com and get the latest on John. And you can also follow him on Twitter at Riggo44. John, thank you so much, man.
Kevin, it's always my pleasure. And as always, best of luck.
All right. Best to everybody, John.
And now back to Claude and Kevin and the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. You know, they aren't half bad for a couple of old guys.
Welcome back to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 and 820 AM, federalnewsradio.com. That's the website. You can email us, as always, federalfootballreport@federalnewsradio.com, and also follow us on Twitter at FFRap. We're talking about Redskins football. They beat the Tennessee Titans 19-17, a 22-yard field goal at the end of regulation for Kai Forbath. Snaps the four-game losing streak. Skins improved to 2-4 on the season. Now let's talk about the rest of the NFC East. The Eagles were on a bye week, Kevin, but the Cowboys and Giants played one another. Dallas beats the Giants by 10 points, 31-34. DeMarco Murray, seven straight games to start the season with over 100 rushing yards, becomes the first running back in NFL history to do that. Dallas improves to 6-1, and the Giants fall to 3-4.
Yeah, for everybody out there that thinks this is a new NFL, you got to throw the ball 50 times a game. Dallas is getting it done on the ground. It's established on the ground. The ground game sets everything up.
And that's really been what's been holding the Cowboys back the last couple of years, that in defense. They haven't really had a great defense, and they would never run the ball. They would always put the game on the shoulders of Tony Romo. And with that responsibility, you know, if he makes the play, the team wins. If he doesn't make the play, the team loses. And a lot of times the frustration has been, why won't they establish and stick to the run, which is some of the things we're starting to say about the Redskins this year. Establish the run, stick to the run. And particularly in this game, what was interesting was that the Giants, as beat up as that defense was, played well against the run for the most part in the first half. And normally what you would see from a Dallas team is they would abandon the run point.
Exactly.
We're only going to try this thing four or five times, and if it doesn't work, we're just going to throw the ball the rest of the game.
Right.
And that's not what they did. They continued to hammer home the run. DeMarco Murray finishes with 28 carries. People run the ball 28 times still in the NFL. Maybe Jay Gruden needs to look at that stat and run out for Morris a little bit more. 28 carries. 128 yards and one touchdown.
And you know, most of their production came in the second half of that game because they didn't abandon their game plan. The Giants were playing hard. You know, the Giants were up to play the Cowboys, right? And they stuck with it. They stuck with it. And not again, you know, feeling about the Cowboys as I do, you know, with the hatred of the intensity of a thousand burning suns. You gotta admire what they're doing. You gotta admire the way a guy like Dez Bryant is maturing before your eyes and becoming a truly, truly elite pass receiver.
Look, and making plays, but not only, but understands that he draws a lot of attention from the defense and loves when Terrence Williams take the most of that opportunity. When Escobar had two touchdowns yesterday, making the most of the opportunity when Witten and Bryant is going to take a bulk of the coverage. And then when the running game's working and you've got to put seven or eight in the box, Terrence Williams is going to get their opportunity. You're starting to see, and this has been one of my criticisms of Dallas and particularly Jason Garrett, is that before they were a team with seemingly no strategy, no game plan, just go out there, play football, Romo would try to win. But now you actually see a strategy, you see a game plan, you see them actually, you know, coming to the table with what seems to be some sort of game plan to attack their opponent. And I mean, you know, they seem to be able. Now, again, I won't believe in the Cowboys until after they get past eight wins. They've got to get to win number nine in order for me to believe that they're going to do
that's
anything
gonna
this
be
year.
A challenge.
But they're close.
That's
I mean,
gonna
they're
be a challenge.
One, so we'll see. But that's they're also the Redskins' next opponent next Monday night, national television under the lights at Cowboys Stadium, AT&T Stadium, going to Dallas to play the Cowboys. What does this game look like for you, Kevin?
I got to ask you one question. Who's going to be under center for the Burgundy and Gold?
See, and that's the question. As of well, one thing I think we know for sure, there's no way you can go back to Kirk Cousins. You just can't do that. After saying that's your guy all week long and then making the change at halftime, unless Colt McCoy just comes out there and lays a goose egg and just flops. I'm talking three turnovers, no points in the first half. There's no way other than something catastrophic that you can go back to Kirk Cousins. You have to go with Colt McCoy. RG3 is not healthy enough to go.
Even if he was.
What we've learned is that you don't want to push him too early. Let him be healthy and come. Look, you're 2-5. You're not right now. There's nothing to play for. And so you might as well just let him get healthy. And if further down the line in the season there's something going on with the playoff push, we'll see. But then I can understand that. But you don't want to push him right now.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't need to be in the game right now. It would be – you know what? I have mixed emotions about that because if you put Kirk back in and he fails – He's shot.
Well, not only is he done with his confidence, but then, you know, you may not want this guy on your team backing up the quarterback anymore.
Right.
He has no tradability right now.
Now, you know, that doesn't mean that's the end of his career because you know who was calling the game yesterday was Rich Gannon.
Rich
Gannon was here. He was a bum. And then a couple of years after that,
he went to the
Super Bowl, right? So it's not, you know, if you're a quarterback and Kirk got the skills, he has the skills to be able to play in this league. It's just that this circumstance, this team and this offensive line isn't quite ready. Now, we said that Colt came in, the other team wasn't prepared for Colt, and you know that the backup quarterback always has that advantage when the other team isn't prepared for him. Now, the Cowboys have a solid week to prepare for Colt McCoy. If I were Gruden, I'd run the ball more. But if I were Gruden, I'd hold off to the last possible minute until the league says I had to before I would name my starter.
Right.
Because that way the Cowboys won't know who to prepare for.
Sure.
And they're going to have to, the Burgundy and Gold is going to have to bring their A game.
But I will tell you this, though. I mean, when you look at Dallas's defense, they're playing better than they played last year, but this defense still is vulnerable to big plays. And if there's one thing the Redskins have on offense, they've got players who can make big plays. When you talk about Jordan Reed, DeSean Jackson, Pierre Garçon, they can stretch the field. The key is, can they keep people out of the quarterback, no matter who that is? Can they keep players out of his face long enough to get the ball downfield? And if you can do that, I mean, I think DeSean Jackson, Pierre Garçon, Jordan Reed, they can eat that secondary up alive.
Hey, it's time for these nine offensive coaches they have on this roster. It's time for them to earn their money.
To do some work around here.
All nine of these guys are going to like camp out at the park this week because they're going to have to come up with a game plan that's going to have to protect the quarterback, even if it's an extra tight end. You got Reed and Niles Paul. Side note here, I think the fact that Reed is staying in the game might be due to the motivation of him seeing Niles Paul
making some plays.
Plays, and he's standing on the sideline. So that's a motivation. That was a sidebar, a side note right there. But they're going to have to either come up with a couple of tight end packages to protect the quarterback or some quick release plays, some hot reads, because they're going to show blitz. They're going to have an eight in the box. They're going to show the blitz, and it's going to be what they are attempting to do, which is to confuse the quarterback by not allowing him and the line to know where the pressure is coming from.
Right.
So they're going to have some good hot reads and some good quick releases, and they've had those. They had them in the Philly game, and it worked very well. It's like I said, it's time for these guys to earn their money. It's entirely possible now, because we saw what happened with the Rams in Seattle yesterday.
Right.
It's entirely possible with enough imagination on the part of the coaching staff, enough trust in the players, and enough belief in themselves as players. Anything is possible, right?
Yeah. No, look, and you're not talking about an opponent who can't be beat. I mean, Dallas is having a really good year, but this team is not some unstoppable machine that, you know, no one. They went to the wire with St. Louis themselves, and that Tennessee game was pretty close, too. So this is not an unbeatable opponent by any stretch of the imagination. And then on defense, it looks like, number one, you're going to have to stop the run, and that secondary is going to have their hands full, because the Cowboys do have a talented bunch of receivers themselves. I mean, we talk about the Redskins' weapons. The Cowboys got weapons on offense, too.
Yeah, a true athlete will always want to go up against the best. You know, that's the best way to measure your ability, your talents as an athlete. Now, somebody's going to have to draw the short straw and hook up with Dez Bryant.
That used to be D'Angelo, and he was always up for the task.
Right. And they would have some great battles.
Yes,
and you could see, and no matter how intense it would be, you saw a mutual respect developing there, right?
Sure.
And it's time for one of these guys, if it's Breland.
Amerson.
If it's Amerson, it's time. EJ Biggers. It's time for one of these guys to start making his name in the league, and not for being the one who got burnt on the 27-yard touchdown pass.
Right. Now, what are your thoughts on this running game? I think back to the passing game, that the Redskins, the key's going to be to get pressure on Romo and try to pressure him into making some mistakes and not give him all day. That's one of the things the Giants did not do a good job of yesterday. They gave Romo all day to throw the ball, and I mean, I'm counting him in the pocket 6-7 seconds, and he's just finding guys wide open because he has all day. In this league, it's hard to cover somebody for 5 seconds, you know, 6 seconds, one of, you know, these receivers. And you got to be able to get pressure on Romo. So we'll see if they're able to do that. But I think the number one key is they've got to find a way to try to stop the run.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting, too, with Arakpo being out. I mean, possibly for the season. The young guys, like I said, Murphy, number one pick this year, he's going to have to – this might be a learning experience, but that's how you're going to learn. You're going to have to learn to get some tough veteran offensive linemen, and we'll see what we got. Like I said, I really, really like the fact that Compton's getting playing time. I think that he's just a football player.
Yeah, absolutely right. Now, when it comes to, look, this is Dallas week, and it used to be something special here in the city. My question to you is, does Dallas week still have that feel to you that it used to have, you know, Redskins, Cowboys, you know, is it still that big deal to you?
Absolutely not. It used to be a time when both teams were up, the game actually meant something other than it being Dallas week. Then it started, you know, fortunately, I'm veteran enough that I remember when George Allen first came to town, that was one of the things. He established two things. He said, we need fan support. And we need to beat the Cowboys. Right, you know.
Right.
And he pretty much told the fans, it was a psychological thing. He said, you know, the Cowboys have been beating on Washington all these years. Now it's our turn to beat on them. And that's what developed it. At one time he actually said this, I wish that I could take Tom Landry to the center of the field. We wouldn't have a football game. We'd just fight. Right in the middle of the field. We just duke it out, right? And with that passion, man, it became contagious. Now, we saw glimpses of it two seasons ago in RG3's rookie year when it was a matter of whoever won that game. It was a playoff game, essentially, right?
And we saw
that. But it's going to take both teams being on top. Now, after the Burgundy Gold beats Dallas this week, and then they might have an opportunity to knock them out the playoffs again this year, that was started up again. But it's going to take the fans to really bring Dallas week back, because the players, they're just trying to get a win.
And you made a good point. I mean, the players are trying to get a win. I think that, that, that even the little bit of, you know, Redskins Cowboys week, the little bit of rivalry that you still kind of feel, it's more so just fans bragging to each other or just talking trash to each other than actually meaning anything. Just, you know, fans trash talking. And that's sad. You know, you want to see both teams. You want this game to mean something, or you want both teams to kind of be in the hunt. That way the games will mean something, you know, and that way still kind of have that. But right now it's just in the last couple of years, it's just been, you know, teams talking trash.
These guys are treading water right now. Right. Look, they were holding their breath yesterday for a 20-yard field goal, right? They're not in the position to talk trash. Now, Deshaun is ready.
Right, yeah, now he's ready to go. Right.
He's ready. I'm hoping Pierre will snap out a little bit and be ready to go. But we've been to, and I think that was always one of my biggest complaints about the Shanahan regime. He was so control-oriented. He wouldn't, you know, the players couldn't talk about certain things without without the coach's approval. And that was suppressing some of their personality to me, right? You know, you need to be boisterous. You need to have the ultimate confidence in yourself as an athlete to say, hey, I'm not the best in the world, but I'm as good as this guy. Well, you know, back in my day, playing basketball, man, I would always make the guy I was playing against think that I was the best player in the world, although I couldn't play. He didn't know that.
That's funny. Yeah,
he didn't know. So getting to the head. So it might be a little bit before the Dallas Week tradition comes back, but it's going to have to start with the fans, the undying support of the team, and the product on the field is going to have to improve.
Well, that's next Monday night at Dallas. It is Dallas Week, so we're going to be on Tuesday with the Federal Football Report. Again, this is the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500, 820 a.m. and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Claude Jennings. Well, we got to talk about a win today, Kevin, and that's good, isn't it? We hadn't had a chance to do that in a few weeks. Skin snap a four-game losing streak, improved to 2-5 on the year, 19-17 win over the Titans. And so it's Dallas Week. Enjoy it. And maybe we'll get to talk about another win next week on the Federal Football Report. Thanks so much for listening.